Welcome back, guys, to another episode of AUP Radio on WRP. Today we're going to hear one great episode of Albums Without Borders as George speaks with his special guest and musician, Sayer Amir. Stay tuned for the show.
To Albums Without Borders, a show where we listen to an album and just kind of see where the conversation takes us. I'm here with
Zahir.
Zahir is a first on Albums Without Borders. He is a guest where we're dissecting his album. He is the artist in question. Remind me of the name of your album.
It's called Don't Trip.
Don't Trip.
Don't Trip.
All right. Hit up my producer, Corey, yesterday and told her I had no content for today because I was cramming an essay. And she said, well, my boyfriend's in town. Give a listen to his album. It's, 12 tracks?
Ten tracks.
10 tracks, about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
So I listened to it on the metro on the way here. It's good stuff, man. Yeah. How long have you been doing
music?
Yeah.
About 6 years now.
Okay. Like you had nothing before 6 years ago?
Yeah, literally nothing.
Oh, damn.
I actually started listening to music for real, like eighth grade.
Okay.
So
like, what do you mean listening to music? As in some song
or just
changed the way you saw music? It wasn't just background noise? You were like...
Yeah, basically, yeah. I just started developing my own taste.
Okay. Do you remember what type of music triggered that in you?
I started off listening to Kendrick.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
I remember where I was the first time I heard Swimming Pools, which just, yeah. And I wasn't exposed to Kendrick pre Good Kid, Mad City. And I've gone back since. But I was at boarding school and somebody was playing Swimming Pools and it was a kid I didn't really like. And we were in like the common room area. And I was like, okay, I got to give this man credit where credit is due. Like, this goes hard. And since then, you know, there's other Kendrick songs that supersede Swimming Pools, but initially that was like, this is dope.
Yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah. I started off, my dad put me on, but like super, like earlier than eighth grade though, he used to play Section 80.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. So that's how I got into him.
Okay.
And then from then on, yeah.
Damn, cool dad.
Yeah.
Really. My dad, I've had to teach him, cause he's very into music, my father, but, he just didn't grow up with hip-hop, R&B. He's from the Southwest, and he born in 1962. Mm-hmm. He's from New Mexico. So he just never got exposed to hip-hop properly. And everything that he... Anytime that he did get exposed to it, it was nuanced and secondary, you know, information about, like, I don't know, just crazy white people shit,
yeah.
Right? And so he saw it for a long time as something that propagated... you know, violence, drug culture, shit like that, the shit you hear commonly. Yeah. And I had to explain to him that, like, this is a reflection of an environment. It's not, like, even if all rap were a propagation of those values, it's not because they love it. It's because that's their life.
Yeah, that's what they experience.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Like, if you want to change the music, change the social setting. And I think he's slowly getting the hang of it, but it still just doesn't, like, click in his brain. Like, when you put on a rap song and he can intellectually appreciate it if you explain it to him, mm-hmm. but there's something that just doesn't hit the brainwaves the mm-hmm. same way.
Yeah.
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 But, I mean, he put me onto plenty of music. But, yeah, hip-hop's tough for him. But we're getting there. We're breaking him down.
Nice, nice, nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you, so you taught yourself to play? Or how'd you learn, like, the instrumentation side of things?
Yeah, so when I first started making music, I used to use YouTube beats.
Okay.
For the first, like, 3 years of it. The first 3 years. And then my dad actually bought me a beat machine, like, when I first started making music.
Okay.
And I tried to learn how to use it, and I couldn't. So, I, yeah.
It's tough, man. It's frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah,
it and it looks so damn easy when you see people do it.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
No, it's not.
But it really is. Like, once you...
Once you get it, right?
Yeah, to understand the basics of it. So, yeah. It was like, everything came together eventually. Mm. But, yeah, I was sitting in my closet for, like, 6 years.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, so, and then I ended up going to college. Then I learned how to play guitar there. And
okay,
then I started,
cool.
Yeah, just playing with it on my own, putting it in my music. And then my friend came down from college, from Connecticut, and he had the same beat machine that I had.
What's the beat machine?
It's called Machine.
Not that I'm going to know it, but yeah.
Yeah, it's actually called Machine. It's
okay.
Native Instruments.
Oh, cool.
Type.
Uh-huh. And can you record your, like, own stuff and upload it onto the machine, or does it come with, like, a preset?
Yeah, they have their own sounds and instruments, and you can do anything, like, record anything, put it on your computer and sample it or whatever. Yeah. You can use anything. It's very free. A very free experience.
How much of a, like, a learning curve was there? Like, were you absolutely garbage at first, or did something click pretty early?
No, I was. Yeah, it was, with beats, I was actually with everything. Yeah,
yeah.
You start off garbage with everything.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, that's it, people don't see the process, right?
Yeah.
They don't see the work that goes into it. They just look at the final product and they're like, oh, this. I wish I had the, you know, artistic vision that this person has. It's like, man, it's about the work.
Yeah, you gotta put in work every day.
For real.
Yeah, but I was, like, delusionally boosting myself. I wasn't good at first, but I thought I was.
I mean, I feel like you need that, right?
Yeah.
You do.
Yeah, to keep going.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you'll just quit.
Because if you doubt yourself at first, you're like, all right, fuck this.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'll download, when you're talking about the beat machines and stuff, I'll download some app, and there'll be, like, one that's $50, and mm-hmm. I'll be like, no, I'm going to get the free version, and the one that makes me watch a bunch of ads first mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And then you make a beat with the, and you're just like, this is garbage, man. This is not for me.
Yeah.
And you delete the app and,
yeah, go back.
Move on. All right. Were you trying to recreate a sound, or, like, you take, like, your influences and repackage them? What was your, or were you just messing around?
When I first started, I tried to copy everybody. Mm. And then eventually I couldn't do that anymore. I think everything just naturally, everything I naturally listened to, like, came out of my music without me having to try. So I just stopped trying to sound like everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just did what I like to hear.
Now that makes plenty of sense. The thing I hear most in the album, the quick listen, you want to guess what I hear? Which artist I hear?
So many people I've heard. I want to hear what you say.
All right. I hear Kevin Abstract.
Really?
That's
different.
I do.
I can see that.
I hear, like, Kevin Abstract in the Rockhampton songs that he's really, like, in charge of.
Because,
you know, when they give other people the space to create in Rockhampton, they can be, like, a little more terse, a little harder, a little more rap heavy. But I like your mixing in of acoustic sounds and indie vibes. No, I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And Roy Blair, who's a former member of Rockhampton. So, like,
oh, really?
Yeah, I hear mm-hmm. that kind of, like, intersection of indie music and hip hop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the way you would describe your sound?
Yeah, that was. I tried to. Cause I always wanted to rap, but I just got super. I got super into acoustic sound, and then I kind of, like, just merged together into one thing. I think that's how I found my sound.
No, it's awesome. It's refreshing.
Yeah.
But who were your influences that you were trying to copy at the beginning of your process?
Kendrick for sure.
Okay, cool.
Anderson .Paak.
I love Anderson .Paak.
Yeah.
That Tiny Desk is amazing.
Yeah. And Childish Gambino also.
Okay.
And
okay, well, I got to ask for Childish Gambino. You got a particular album, because he changes his speed every time.
Some, Awaken My Love.
Okay, cool.
For sure.
Yeah.
That and Because of the Internet.
Okay, yeah.
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 It's like a mixture of those.
I think every single episode, pretty much, that I've had on this show.
We always bring a pitchfork, and
I always use Childish Gambino's Camp album as a reminder that you should take these reviews with a grain of salt, because they gave him a 1.6
for that?
Out of 10 Damn. On Camp. And that was an album that I listened to as a kid that I was like,
this is,
I love this, man. Yeah. This is hard. It does make a little sense that, like, as a 13-year-old, I loved it,
yeah.
And a professional music reviewer is like, this is garbage.
Yeah.
I think the main issue he took with it was the fact that Childish Gambino was trying to present himself as something new, as this, like, nerdy black kid who was making raps, right? And he's like, the writer is like, that's backpack rap. And that was Kanye. you're not new at this. Like, this is, but for me, I don't know. Like, the sounds aren't exactly the same, but I can see what he was saying, you know. And the other problem he took with it is, like, this is a stand-up comedian writing raps.
Yeah.
Right? Because all of his, like, punchlines are really quick. There's not a lot of continuity in a song. Like, from the beginning of a song to the end of the song, he can be talking about completely different things.
Yeah, the entire time.
But it's very entertaining.
Yeah, it's
for
fun.
Sure. It's very fun. Yeah. And then he does that that long kind of spoken word one about the, I forget what it's called. Oh, it's called Letter Home, where he talks about being on the bus on the way home and having a vibe with this girl. And then the girl, you know, he tells her that how he feels about her. And then he falls asleep and wakes up to the girl telling some other girls, and they're laughing at him, and he talks about how that affected his career, and he's like, I learned that day to cut out the middleman, right? Just, like, tell everybody everything about yourself, because then nobody has any power over you, right? If you're the person to disseminate the information, nobody can turn around and be like, I know this about you. It's like, yeah dude, I told you that.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's power in music about that, the vulnerability of music, and I feel like, I don't know, I don't write lyrics. Sometimes I get hammered drunk and write poetry in my notes, and so but I don't say it to anybody, right?
Yeah.
But there's power in being vulnerable, in being the one who chooses to almost like out yourself.
Yeah, literally.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's got to be tough, right, to be vulnerable. And I wouldn't know because I don't again put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
But is that something that like is the process, the songwriting process for you, therapeutic to a degree?
Very therapeutic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like with the content of it, that's like my parents too, like listening to it. It's very.
Oh, true.
Yeah. So.
Oh, true. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't think about that. Because you talk a lot about psychedelics.
Yeah.
Don't Trip, his album.
Yeah. A lot of drugs and stuff in it.
But how did your parents react to that?
Yeah. I didn't even say anything. No? It was just, yeah. So it was like, I, like, super subconscious while writing it about that and like. Making sure, like, how I choose my words when I, like, finish the songs and all that. But, yeah, eventually I just stopped and just... Well, I mean, you can't really control it. You just have to say how you feel, but...
For sure. I mean, people can feel authenticity.
Yeah.
For sure. They know if you're pandering, essentially. It's like, this isn't this man's experience. This is what this man thinks I want to hear.
Exactly.
Which never hits the same.
Yeah.
It never does. Now, that's cool that your parents were chill.
Yeah.
I think if I did the same thing, my dad would... find it interesting and want to have a conversation, and my mom probably the same, but she would be like, George, come on. Oh,
yeah.
I don't know, like, for example, I got my ear pierced a couple weeks ago, and I was talking to my mom on FaceTime for like a couple, like an hour or so, and she didn't notice the whole time. At the end of FaceTime, I just put like it up to my ear. And she was like, what are you doing? Like, she didn't notice the whole time, and she had to, like, squint, and then she saw it, and she's like, aw, George. She's like, you're tatted and pierced. And I was like, I have the tiniest tattoo on my chest, and I have a helix piercing that you didn't notice for an hour, and you're like, oh, no, his life is ruined. But I don't know. She's a little waspy, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my dad, I sent him a picture of it, and he was like, oh, cool.
This is basically my parents also, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was a while ago, but my brother moved to Florida. We all went down there, and we took acid together.
Hell yeah.
Like, all of us, yeah. And then...
Were you all of us, like, your parents included?
No.
Oh, I was like, damn.
Nah, it was me, him, his girlfriend, and my other sister.
Okay.
So we all took it together. And then somehow my mom figured out about it. And she was going crazy at first. And then like a week or two after I got back, we had like a whole conversation about it.
A little mini intervention?
Yeah. Not even intervention, just views. We just shared our views. Oh, okay. That's nice. Yeah,
that's cool. Healthy.
Yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, but it was weird with the music because I feel like I went into a lot more depth.
Yeah, yeah.
With why I did and how.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And were you expecting a more of a reaction?
I was. Or just a conversation, but they didn't say anything. Yeah. So.
I think, I don't know, like obviously I don't know your parents, but it's very healthy and I think I would applaud them for just understanding like it is what it is type of thing and not creating taboos, because I think taboos can be so negatively powerful, mm-hmm. right? Like, you tell somebody not to do something, and it just makes them want to do it more.
Yeah.
And if you can't, I don't know, like, I have a friend who went to Stanford, for example, and they have a policy where you don't get in trouble for drinking as long as your door is open, even no matter what age you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is so smart, and I don't think the people at Stanford would be making stupid decisions. They'd, you know, probably have several research studies on the impacts of taboos, and I don't know. But the point is, like, if you're in trouble because you drank too much, your door's open and somebody's going to see you.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be fine. And also, it takes away that, like, it takes away the taboo, the, ooh, I'm doing something devious, and that's fine, and it stimulates your brain in a different way. I don't know. So they're like, should I have a beer or should I go study? Maybe I'll go study.
Yeah,
whereas if they're like, don't do that, they're like, oh, we're going to go hide in the woods and drink 6-4 Locos.
Yeah, that's how it was when I started smoking too. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I remember I went to University of Virginia for a while, we would go smoke in the woods, and
for no reason.
You just get, like, catatonically high, and then you're sure that somebody's, like watching
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
You feel like you're in middle school or something, like, oh, God, gotta run.
Indeed.
Where it's like, what's the harm in providing a space where somebody can safely do this, because they're going to do it anyway.
Yes, exactly.
Right. And then it might lead to them figuring out, oh, I don't like this, right? Like, I don't need to be high. Whereas creating that taboo provides like a second space where you're doing an activity that's fun and countercultural and that might be fun to them, so they keep smoking weed, even though they don't like weed.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many people who get out of college, and they're like, I don't like weed.
Yeah.
You know, I think that might be why. That and, like, the paranoia. Like, you just got to see it through, man. You got to smoke another joint. Get to the other side of it.
A lot of things. Weed is a powerful drug.
Yeah. For sure. No, it is. And I think people, like, don't fully understand that. Like, they get into it because it's glorified in culture and seen as, like, cool and... movies, music, whatever, and so they get into it, and they're like, oh, yeah, this is part of my identity, and then when they start to, like, actually form their identity, and they're smoking weed, and it makes them anxious, it's like, I think you're anxious because there's something to be anxious about, right? As opposed to, like, it's weed making you anxious. Weed just makes you think, man.
Yeah, it does. It brings out yourself.
It does. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And I still get anxious sometimes when I smoke, but I just know that I'm just anxious and it's gonna pass, it'll be all right.
Yeah.
But it does, like, it just makes movies and music and everything just kind of hit on a different level, man. It's great.
I think I had to take myself out of it because I was smoking, like, consistently for the past, like, 2 years, like 3-4 times a day, like going crazy
every day.
I
was doing the same thing. When I was at UVA, I would smoke probably 5 times a day. I had a bong and I would do spliff bowls. It was nasty, man. It was probably the reason that I smoked as much as I did, because the nicotine part of it. But like 50-50 weed, nicotine, and then a layer of nicotine on tobacco on top. And then I just ripped the whole bowl, like a fat bowl. And you sit there for about a minute afterward. You're just, like, catatonic. You can't move. You're, like, drooling, coughing. And we just take turns doing this in, like, a circle. And looking back on it, I'm like, what the hell were we doing?
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
Yeah.
And I tried to do it. I remember I went abroad and I came back. And I'd barely smoked. Like, I smoked a little bit of hash when I could find it. And I was in Tunis. That's all I had. And when I came back, I tried to smoke a spliff bowl and just immediately puked.
Yeah, tolerance goes crazy.
Oh, yeah, man.
Literally.
So now I smoke, but, like, I try to do it with friends on a night out. or like last night when I finished my essay at 4 a.m. Yeah. And I was like, I deserve this. Yeah.
For real. It was it was therapeutic for me also. Like that was like, I used to like go outside on the porch.
Oh yeah, for real.
I wouldn't even do anything sometimes. Just sit out there for like 20, 30 minutes and just smoke by myself. It was
It's nice. It's like, if it's a conduit to being pensive and sitting there with your thoughts, I think that's definitely a good thing more than it is a bad thing, right?
Yeah.
Because I think so many people suppress their subconscious, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you bury it and you don't really think about it. And I think weed just brings that up to the surface and makes you think about it. Maybe not to the extent that psychedelics do.
This is AUP Radio on WRP, and you are listening to Albums Without Borders with George and his guest, Zaire Amir. Stay tuned. No cat, we scrap. Ooh, I didn't realize this shit lasts like a tattoo. Whoever said this shit is easy, that's not true. That's not true. The only nigga I fear is myself. Only wanna get high.
With mushrooms, I find that I kind of just don't think. Like I just get really zen. And I have general anxiety and it just goes away. Like I have this tightness in my chest almost all the time. And then I take mushrooms and
like
everything's gone. I just feel like a plant. Like you're just like
literally.
I'm just part of the earth, man. It sounds like some hippie shit, but it's true. I'm just like
literally. But that's what the world is. People act that's not what it is. But yeah, I'm like,
that's what you are.
Exactly. So I don't know.
You're part of the same particles, man. We're
exactly
stardust.
For real.
But yeah,
it makes you feel it. I mean, yeah, it brings you back to your.
I mean, it is gonna sound like hippie shit if you say it to some dude who works at a corporate 9-to-5, right?
Yeah.
Who's completely detached from that idea that he's. You know, he thinks of himself as some sort of, I don't know, like deity almost. Like he's not part of this
actual
system.
Realm. Yeah, like he's separated from nature completely.
Yeah, we're not, just because we have conscious thought. You know?
Yeah, like you eat food, you drink water, you retain the nutrients from the world, like everything.
Yeah, so I think the hippies figured something out, man. Yeah. There's a reason that movement was so huge.
Yeah.
And then it fell apart because they were
popularized.
Yeah, popularized, and then the people who started participating in it were participating in it because it was cool, not because
it was actually
healthy mentally or whatever. Mm-hmm. They were more about Woodstock than they were about finding inner peace.
Yeah.
And I've never had a bad trip. I gotta find some wood to knock on.
For real, yeah. No, I have. So I,
oh shit.
Yeah. Only on acid though. But with shrooms, I've gotten. It feels the same on acid and on shrooms, but I've realized, because I didn't know what a bad trip was until I had it, but it's really just you being anxious. It's like same with weed, but like you're on acid, so like you being anxious on acid is not a good experience.
Nah, and it was funny, the first time I took acid, my brother's buddy was dog sitting in the countryside. So it was a little idyllic house on a hill with a big backyard and... In the mountains in Virginia, and I showed up like an hour and a half after everybody had got there, and they had already taken a tab, which I guess was actually like 1.5. Mm. And they were like, we don't feel anything yet, so we're going to take another tab.
Oh, no.
You should just take two.
Oh, no.
Yeah. <dude. laughs> So I took like 3 tabs of acid my first time.
Oh, what?
Yeah. So I was tripping for like 12 hours. And it was an overall great experience. My brother is the type of person, he was like, he brought a bunch of weed. Mm. He brought adult coloring books, mm-hmm. not adult like porn, but like adult, like, you know, interesting shit. Uh-huh. And we had music, we had the dogs, we made food. Not that we ate it, because we were on acid, you're like, I don't want food right now. But the sun went behind the clouds at one point, uh-huh. and I was facing the other way, so I didn't see that that was what was causing it. Uh-huh. And everything got like dark, right? And yeah. I was like, oh shit, man. Oh shit, you guys, I think my trip's going bad. You guys need to cheer me up. Come on, like, say something, cheer me up. And they were like, yeah, the sun just went behind the clouds. And so for the next couple minutes, I was just pissing myself laughing.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it switched. As soon as I knew it was, like, an external thing and not something inside my brain, I was like, that's fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that's cool. It's, like, it's super cool. Like, that's, like, self-discipline, because you can take that outside of when you're on drugs. And you can notice when, like, I'm about to stress out. Like,
let me ground myself real quick.
Yeah.
They say, like, when you're having about to have a panic attack, like, observe things and then say what color they are. Hmm. Like, blue chair, red book. I don't know, clear window.
Take your mind off.
And it just, like, regrounds you and where you are in that time and that space. And because, you know, that fear, that anxiety is really based on nothing. Like, nothing's happening. I mean, something could be happening. But for the most part, I imagine you're not, you know, in front of a gunman or something like that. There's no real reason for the anxiety. There's nothing that's about to happen to you.
Yeah, it's all in your head.
Yeah. Do you think there's a track that explores that? Like, I guess I can just put it this way. Is there, because it generally talks about psychedelics, the album. What's, like, the most impactful track to you? What's the centerpiece? Do you have one?
It's about a lot of things. But I feel like that's what's so cool about it, because it's, like, different tracks hit for, like, different reasons.
Yeah.
I think the last track, specifically in terms of psychedelics, in terms of everything, though.
It's called Don't Trip, right? The last track?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, and it's just, it's very kind of literal, but like kind of like double entendre kind of a little bit, but this goes into like basically like it's not that deep.
It's
like,
not that deep, bro.
Yeah,
you're gonna be all right.
Yeah, because you know, talked about how like I tripped. I felt like I was going through it a whole bunch of times, and I always get through it. So that's what it means to me.
At least. I mean, you're here now, huh?
Yeah.
It's gonna be all right. And I saw you got a couple features on there.
Yeah,
are those your homies?
Yeah, Face is, that's my brother,
actually. Oh, cool.
Yeah, when you came in, the video was playing, that was him. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
And then the other person on there is my friend
Matt.
Matt Carbon.
Yeah,
we started making music at the same time, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's flexible, because I knew him all my life, or the same time as long as I knew Corey.
Okay.
Yeah, we all went to church together, and 1 year we were in like summer camp or something. And then we all just started hanging out like crazy. And then that's when I started making music. And then he got into it with me.
Hell yeah.
So we was rapping together for 6 years the whole time. So we kind of like...
You said you met at church?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, developed a style together.
You still go to church?
Nah.
Yeah, I'm always curious about like the intersection of, I don't know, doing things like taking psychedelic drugs and going to church. And I don't... Like, it's hard for me to understand if they're reconcilable, if they're mutually exclusive, because I just haven't been a member of the church since I was...
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I went to church when I was in high school because we had to. I went to boarding school, but it was always a dissenting attendance.
Yeah.
I think it does... Like, being told what to do is not... Yeah. Like we said, it's the opposite of a taboo, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And, like, you got to go to church. It's like, well, now it's a task, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you'd let me find my spirituality by myself and see God in nature and see God in relationships with people, maybe I'd go to church.
Yeah.
But when it's like, all right, you got to wake up early on a Sunday to go to church, I'm like, man, I'm 16, bro. I'm tired. Come on. And then, I kind of see them in opposition, you know? Mm-hmm. But they definitely don't have to be.
They don't.
No.
I used to hate going to church when I was younger. And then when we first went to that church, my mom brought us there. Like, we moved, and then she found a new place.
Where was this? Georgia?
Yeah.
Okay.
We used to stay in Decatur, then we went to Stone Mountain.
Okay.
So she found the church, and at first I didn't like going there, but then she ended up stopped going to the church, and I kept going. I was the only one kept going. But yeah, all my friends were there, so it was like we'd all come like every Saturday. Like we would stay there till like 2-3 o'clock just talking, or we'd go to the park. We used to smoke after church too, like all of us. It was a thing.
I like that idea. Yeah. That they're not in opposition, because like the churches I went to growing up, obviously like when I was at boarding school, you can't go smoke even a cigarette afterward. If you get caught smoking a cigarette at school, you have to write like 200 lines.
Oh, what?
The first time, second time 400 lines. What? And then if you keep doing it, you can get in some serious shit, like just for a cigarette. And if you get caught smoking weed, you're out of school.
What?
Like zero tolerance. I only ever saw one kid smoke weed at school. And he was the type of kid to do it. He didn't give a fuck. But yeah, so like that's why they seem in opposition to me. And I like the idea of like, I don't know, being stoned as fuck and listening to a sermon and being like,
real. I used to smoke every time I went there, or like before I went. Yeah. I used to come in high.
No, I feel like that would hit different.
Yeah.
But or I would go to church with my grandma, uh-huh, who lives in like Naples, Florida.
Uh-huh.
Right. So it's just like these, I don't know, not like Texas mega church, but like a big fancy church, mm-hmm, where, you know, a bunch of people in khakis and button downs and loafers, and it just wouldn't hit the same, I don't think, as something where the point is to be spiritual and open. And although it would be entertaining to go to like one of those mega churches in Texas. Mm-hmm. Like, you seen Borat? You haven't seen Borat?
No, was that a movie?
Yeah, bro. You've never heard of Borat?
No.
Oh, damn. You know Sacha Baron Cohen?
No.
Ali G?
No.
The Dictator?
No. Fuck. Wait, yeah. The Dictator? Yeah, the Dictator, I do know that one. Right.
The Dictator is, that's Sacha Baron Cohen, is the actor who plays him.
Okay.
And The Dictator is very much like a script,
mm-hmm,
right? But before that, he did movies and TV shows where it was, he would go into character, mm-hmm, and then interact with the public.
Oh.
His character was presented as a real person, so they would do like interviews most of the time. Some people knew that he was playing a character, but mm-hmm, sometimes they didn't. And there's one in Borat, this movie, about a Kazakh man who goes to the United States and mm-hmm, is trying to find out what American culture is like, basically. But he goes to a Texas megachurch, and he's like, they think he's a real person. Mm-hmm. They think he's filming some sort of insight, which he is, but he's a character. And he's like, asking him to get the demons out of him, the pastor, and he does all the, you know, speaking in tongues and holds his hand over his head, and he plays along with it, and he's like freaking out, speaking in tongues back to him, like falls to the floor, is writhing around. And I think it would be amazing to see something like that, high or not high, just like, who are these people, man? Like, and then you see the pastor get into his Rolls Royce afterwards.
Like
that.
Oh, God, no. It is like that.
Yeah.
Our church was small, so.
Okay.
Very small. Yeah. I was untraditional, too. I never even dressed up. I used to go in my pajamas sometimes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's chill. That's how it should be. It's like religion shouldn't be, there shouldn't be barriers to entry for spirituality, religion, you know? Like, if you show up, I mean, that's the point of Christianity. That's the things that they teach, right? Mm-hmm. Of being accepting. And I think that's another problem that I have with Christianity, is the version I see of it in the United States in particular, they don't practice the same values they preach.
Literally came up with the whole saying.
Yeah, practice what you preach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you do the production side of things, is it all you?
Yeah, I did everything.
Damn, dude.
Yeah, everything.
So the bass, for example, and the drums, are they from loops that you find, or are they like you record the loops and upload them to the machine? Or
I have a machine has like these already like pre-recorded acoustic drums, like the kick and the snare, everything separated, so you can program your own patterns.
Okay. I did and that. Same with the bass or no?
No, I played the bass.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
And guitar. Nice. So all the instruments I play, and then the drums I programmed.
Okay.
But some of them were loops though, so I found. That's so cool. It's like 50-50 with the drums, because I don't know how to play drums at all, so.
No.
Yeah.
I played drums and bass as a kid, and then, I mean, I regret so much stopping, but they also just felt like tasks to me. It felt like something I should be doing. I was signed up for classes. I would go to, like, one class a week, and I would never practice, ever. They'd be like, all right, you got to practice this when I see you next week, and then I'd get there, and they'd be like, you practice? And I'd be like, nope. And they're, you know, a music teacher that's there to, you know, probably supplement their music career. Or they were often like trying to be recording artists or studio artists where you could hire, right? And they're there to supplement their paycheck by teaching some kids. And if they're not going to yell at you if you don't practice, like they don't really care.
Yeah.
But they're like, if you want to get better, you should practice. And I'm like, that makes sense intellectually. And then I wouldn't practice.
It's the way you like package it though. Like even when I was learning guitar, like they would, they'd have me learning like classical music and shit. So I was like, I'm not going to practice this during the week. So the only reason I even learned how to play guitar for real is because like my dad, he also played guitar. And he taught me how to play like bar chords and shit. And then once I learned how to do that, like I started like actually just playing it with my own music and recording it. So it was like, that's, that was my practice during the week. So it wasn't like I wasn't going through the books and learning the songs.
But. And that's where it's like interesting to you. It's therapeutic to a degree. Yeah. It's cerebral. It's not just like, it's not like taking a test, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, I've got to learn how to play Debussy's seventh.
It's not even learning at that point. You're literally
You're just playing music. You're expressing yourself, and you'll get better at it.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I do think it instilled in me a love for music and a decent sense of rhythm and a way to appreciate, music in general. And I do find that I gravitate towards bass lines more than anything else. I don't know if that's natural or if something that's learned.
So.
You think it's natural? You think most people, that's what you feel is the bass line?
Because you can't even hear the most, but that's like you feel that in your body.
Yeah, you do.
Else.
That like that's drums. What you should be moving to. That's like with people who don't look like they're dancing right. They're like dancing to,
not,
they're dancing to the melody, not to the bass,
right?
Yeah. To that rhythm. Yeah. No, so, but yeah, I'm wondering, like that's the natural thing to do. But I'm wondering if it is a learned behavior of mine or if it's just like I just know because of exposure to music. I don't know. But I'd like to think the playing the bass helped me like
hear that part.
Yeah, hear that part more actively.
I think so. I think if you don't play music, I think people instinctually gravitate towards that. They just don't know why. But I think if you understand music more, it's like, okay, this is why. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like you've heard Lost in Yesterday by Tame Impala?
Yes. I mean, I've listened to Tame Impala albums. I'm not, I'm not a stan by any means. Mm-hmm. I like his stuff, but I don't know track names apart from like maybe five.
I don't know. It just has like this crazy bass line in it.
Okay, you said Lost in Yesterday.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it a listen.
Yeah, you should check this.
I like Elephant.
Yeah, it's a good
That's
one.
A vibe. I saw him. I saw him live in London.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, but so here's the thing: I went to this day festival with my friends, or with my friend who goes to Oxford or went to Oxford, and a bunch of his buddies. And I was expecting them to be, I don't know, a little more stuck up. I didn't have a good idea of what Oxford kids were like, but they explore that shit just as much as anybody else. And my friend, I think I expected him to be stuck up, not because he's stuck up, but he's just like very smart and very grounded and I don't know, not like a wild card at all, right? And so we got there and his friends were very chill and we were all sitting around. We found a drink or two, waiting for the stuff to really kick off for the day. And some guy bought out a little bag of, I think it were pills, maybe it were tabs. I don't know. But I didn't know what the drug was. And they explained it to me. Oh, it's 2CB. It's this like synthetic psychedelic stimulant. And it's got no side effects. And I was like, well, damn, okay. And I was a little unsure. But as soon as I saw my friend take it, I was like, if Callum's taking it, I'm taking it. Like, there's no way this man would take anything that he didn't know was going to be fine afterward. So we took it and we saw a bunch of acts, this old Australian, like, metal alternative band called Hawkwind, which was hilarious. We found a joint on the floor and smoked it, which was so stupid. Could have had anything in it.
Yeah.
But it was a vibe. And then the people in front of us started, like, checking their pockets for clearly the joint that they had dropped. And we were like, say nothing. Yeah. But Tame Impala was headlining. And just before Tame Impala, kind of like with an overlap, was Leon Bridges. And I was super into Leon Bridges at the time. Mm-hmm. I still very much like his music, but they were like, "Oh, we're gonna go see Tame Impala. Come on, let's go." And I was like, "Oh no, I'm staying here. Like, oh. I'm watching Leon Bridges," because I knew a couple Tame Impala songs at the time. Mm-hmm. This was 2019, I want to say.
That's right.
3 years ago.
Yeah, that's right before. When his album came out, I think.
Yeah.
The new one.
Yeah. You mean Leon Bridges, the Beyond one, or you mean Tame Impala's?
Tame Impala's.
Okay. And so I was by myself on this drag I'd never done, kind of stoned, but I was having the best time. And so I only saw the end of Tame Impala, but I was standing there, Leon Bridges, singing like every lyric. Mm-hmm. He was still relatively new. I think people had knew his song that was in the Apple commercial, River, mm-hmm. that got a lot of radio play. Mm-hmm. But like, I knew every lyric. And I remember these girls behind me being like, "Oh man, this guy's feeling himself." And I was like, "Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. This is great." And then I saw the end of Tame Impala, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
And since then, I've gotten more into him. But yeah, it's still something I need to explore. And I give him his credit. I just think I got time, you know, to listen to
that
stuff.
Is true. No, I like that because you get to an artist and you not play them out, but you kind of like...
Yeah, binge it a little too hard.
Yeah, and then it's like, I don't know, you have nothing more to offer me.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did with Leon Bridges, to be fair. Like, I was like, this is all I listen to now. Yeah. And then... and now I just tend not to. But when it, like, if I put my music on shuffle and it comes up, I'm like, okay, I can vibe to this.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to see him, though. Tame Impala.
No, he was great. Yeah. And people were going wild. Yeah. People loved him.
Yeah, I'm trying to, like, take some ecstasy, go to his concert.
Hell yeah. Crazy.
This is AEP Radio on WRP. And you are listening to Albums Without Borders.
Time I try to find joy and peace in my mind, so I write these rhymes and go blind, like I never seen you in those times. I know it's all for the skies, I know you down for the riding, I know you all for the lies, I know you all for the smiling. I know you always get by, you can't always come to me when you just want to lay in my eyes.
And we're back with Albums Without Borders.
First time I took ecstasy, I saw Hozier live.
Mm-hmm.
You know Hozier?
Hozier?
You know the guy who sings "Take Me to Church"? You know the song "Take Me to Church"?
Yeah, to sing it.
Take me to church, I'm moving like a dog in the shine of your light.
Oh, wait.
I'll sell you my skins and
I
you can
so.
Sharpen your knife. Corey, this man doesn't know Hozier. Anyway, his music's amazing. Like that song. Way overplayed. Decent song. Good song. But his music's amazing. Honestly, phenomenal. Especially his first album, which is all that he had released at the time that I saw him.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been binging it. So, you know, like, when it aligns perfectly, you've been binging an artist, and then you see them live, and you're just like, this is amazing. And so I took Molly. I was at Austin City Limits. And I remember, like, the... I have this clear memory of like the sun setting behind him.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out on stage and does like that, you know, chord check on his guitar. And I'm just like, whoo, like, I just feel it come up through my body. And I'm like, this is amazing. I actually think I screamed, "This is fucking awesome." And there was, cause it wasn't that late in the night. There were still like kids around and there was this girl on her dad's shoulders and my cousin tapped me on the shoulder and was like, just pointed at the little kid. And I was like, ooh, "This is really cool." He shouted that really loud. But yeah, that was awesome. He did a cover of Blackbird by the Beatles, which was phenomenal. And it's just an odd story because people, I feel like, smoke a bunch of weed and go see Hozier. He's like, he's an Irish poet who does indie rock, basically. Like, his music is basically background to his poetry. I think his lyrics are amazing. So ecstasy doesn't seem like the first, like the go-to drug for that, but it was amazing. It was phenomenal. And then the weekend was after that, and that was a crazy show.
What?
That's a cool thing about Austin City Limits. They just put everything together, man.
It's different.
And then the weekend show was maybe more appropriate for ecstasy with like fire shooting up in the air and everybody going nuts. And I was like, okay, this, I'm not a huge weekend fan, but this man's a performer and I know a few songs. He did Dirty Diana, his cover of Dirty Diana, which I love. But yeah. I don't know if it was the most conducive drug to it. Well, it doesn't seem like intellectually it would be, but it it hit it pretty nice. It was good. And I was rolling until hours after the concert because it was my first time on Molly. my cousin gave me these like glasses that are supposed to like distort everything in a kind of trippy way. What's it called? Like a kaleidoscope, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and then he was like, yeah, normally people wear those for about 5 minutes. They're like, this is cool, and then they take them off. Apparently, I was wearing them for like 3 hours.
What?
I was walking around with these kaleidoscope glasses on. My cousins thought it was the funniest thing. They were like, are you okay? And I was like, my jaw hurts. And they were like, you don't have gum? And I was like, do I need gum?
Oh, that is true. I was crunching my teeth the entire time. Yeah, dude. I had to like literally like take myself out of it, like remind myself.
The next day, I was like, I got lockjaw.
Yeah, you didn't even peep it. Like, you just, the whole time. It's weird. I forget about that. Yeah. I forgot about that.
I can almost feel it now. It's crazy.
It's fun, though.
Yeah. And then the second time I took it was at, second time I took ecstasy was at something called Lights All Night in Dallas, which is like a New Year's Eve party. And that was EDM. And I don't really fuck with EDM, but if you're going to do ecstasy, I guess that would be the place to do it, right? And it was all right. But then I threw up. And then I got, they had all these fusion food trucks out back. I'm like, this is not what you want when you're tripping or anything. You don't want a kimchi hot dog, bro. I want a plain grilled cheese.
Regularly.
So I took a bite of this hot dog, and because I'm like all happy, I'm on ecstasy, whatever, I'm like, oh, maybe somebody else will want this. So I'm just walking around like wide-eyed like this, offering people, random people,
kimchi hot dog
with a bite taken out of it. And everybody's like, I'm okay. Thank you. Thank you, though. And I was like, okay, no worries. Have a good night.
That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, we tried to take it at a club, and we took it there. And then, yeah, the music was garbage.
Oh, shit.
And so we both, like...
That does not help.
Yeah, so it was like, I'm not feeling it. So, and then it didn't even kick in the entire time. We were there for like an hour. So we leave, and so it's like 2 a.m. now.
Damn.
Yeah, so, like, we leave, we call the Uber, and on the way home, that shit kicks in.
Oh, fuck.
It was like, because at first, it was like, this shit is not
working.
Hey,
yo, can I get aux?
No, we were like, I was ready to get back to the spot.
Okay, fair.
But yeah, so it was really, wasn't even the music or anything. We were just chilling the whole time. It was nice.
Fair.
Very nice.
Yeah, I remember getting home, and because I was still rolling, it's so fucking stupid. My cousin was playing a G-Eazy song. I Mean It. You remember that song?
Nah.
No, if I ever said I'll fuck your bitch, just know I mean it. It's not a good song.
That's funny.
But I was like, what is this? What is this magical noise?
That's funny.
And I was listening to it on repeat for about an hour and a half in my headphones.
Damn.
Just sitting there, and everybody was like, you good? And I was like, I am fantastic.
Yeah.
Are you good?
Yeah.
Because everybody else had calmed down. They were smoking joints and chilling, watching something, having a beer, just like calm. And I was just like, no. All my cousins are who I went with are older than me. And they're like getting maybe like close to 10 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So I was 18, 19 at the time. And they're all in their late 20s and seasoned, seasoned druggies. Yeah. They love to go to festivals. My brother and I were kind of just tagging along.
Yeah.
But they would go to like, I don't know, six festivals a year. There were these yuppie professionals who, that's how they balanced their corporate life, I guess. They were like, I don't,
I don't fuck with what I'm doing on a daily basis. I might actually like my job, but it's draining, and I don't like, you know, being a slave to capitalism, all that bullshit. So I'm just going to go to a festival and do a bunch of drugs, and it'll balance out.
Yeah.
They were like, he'll be okay. They're there. Little pat on the head.
That's funny. Complete opposite lifestyle I have. Mm. Take drugs for fun.
Hell yeah. That's how it should be. I think. It's just like, I think it makes you less prone to like binging the drugs or getting a problem with them.
Yeah.
This one dude who was there took 10 points of Molly. Big dude, to be fair. Uh-huh. Big dude. Former Marine. Name's Jay. He was like probably 275 pounds, 6'3".
Jesus.
Big lad, for sure. He's a pastor now. Yeah, he's on Instagram and he reads like Bible scriptures to his on live and shit.
It's different.
It's pretty funny because I was like, I seen you fucked up at ACO, bro. I guess he's fine. It didn't seem to do much damage. Themes on the album did you set out to pursue themes? Did you have something that was supposed to string the whole thing together? Or did you kind of just make tracks, you were in a certain mind space, and they happened to, you know what I mean? Like, did you have, like, oh, I'm going to make track one like this, and it's going to explore into here and then go back down? Or did you just kind of make music and then piece it together how it sounded right?
Yes, that's how I did it.
The latter?
Like a... Yes, because I was all made in, like, span of, like, maybe, like, July.
Mm.
July of 2021 to November.
Okay.
So it was all, like, one that little short period, which is... That's a good amount of time, though. But, yeah, so...
So it represents your...
My mindset.
Your mindset in that time frame.
So I was like, yeah, a lot of drugs and a lot of weed, a lot of... Not, at the time, I was taking acid, but I don't like acid anymore. But a lot of... A lot of weed, self-discovery, things I was going through.
That makes sense.
So.
No, that's cool. I like that idea that it's an organic reflection of your time.
Yeah.
And it would be, it's almost like we're talking about how you need to be vulnerable to be an artist.
Yeah.
It's like releasing a diary to everybody.
Yeah, it was. It was a scary thing.
Yeah. But feedback-wise, I can't imagine you got anything negative, man. It's a good album, bro.
Yeah, it was different.
That's awesome.
I was super proud of it.
How'd that feel?
It was, yeah.
Taking a risk and being vulnerable and then getting positive feedback, you know, people are like, damn, dude.
Yeah.
It's got to feel good.
Yeah, it's freeing. Yeah. Things like you don't have to be scared to just talk or be open.
For real.
That's very...
And you don't have to pay for therapy.
Exactly. Literally.
I just realized we haven't mentioned the name of the album yet.
This is Don't Trip.
Oh, no, we have. We just didn't say your name.
Oh.
Zaire Amir.
Yeah, that is
all
me.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for it on Spotify or Apple Music or wherever you get your music, it is Zahir. So Z-A-H-I-R, Amir, A-M-E-E-R, all one word. We'll put it in the title track when we upload the shit. But I think that's about all we got time for today.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for being on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. It's great.
All right. Thanks for listening to Albums Without Borders. We'll talk to you again soon. And I can tell when I need help, I just roll out till I can feel like, oh shit, when you're not here, I'm not myself. No, that's not me. You said I'm fine, but maybe I'm not. You know I care for you, I call you mine. And all this time I spent, I'm there, all right. I'm fucked up, baby, I need you. Don't trust us, but she loves me. I'll be right by your side, baby. You know I waited, now I can't take it. But you right now, I got no damn patience. And I've been since changed up. I know you hate it. You try to paint me different. You couldn't say I'm living. And I don't care if they paid me, I want it back. They put me through hell just so I could come back and tell them straight to their face. Niggas nothing but dirt. I try to cover my pain, drag you down when I'm hurt. I run my feet through the grass and bring me closer to earth. Feel like I'm closer to God. Just need to cry in the church. Screaming, I don't deserve you. Baby, I don't deserve you. And I can't tell when I need up. I just roll up till I can feel. I go to shit when you're not here. I'm not myself. No, that's not me. You said I'm fine, but baby, I'm not. You know I care for you. I call you mine. And all this time I spent on that, right. Last night, I was so high with my bright red eyes. Had to realize my lines take time. Had to learn fly with the birds outside. Now we putting up in a rover. Now this ain't Stone Mountain, Georgia. And now she chugging on the wine like soda. And she wanna come wine, go slower. I come over. Nigga, no, yo. Tried to hide the paint, took out the band-aid, soldier. Drowning in a bucket of champagne, I know you. Take a hit of these and it'll take you right over. I don't know what else to say, except that it's a beautiful day. And even though you had hours away, I'll never forget your face. 100 miles away. Tell when I need help, I just roll up till I can feel. I go to shit when you're not here. I'm not myself. No, that's not me. You said I'm fine, but maybe I'm not. You know I care for you. I call it mine. And all this time I spent on that, right? I'm fucked up, baby. I need you. But you don't trust us. She loved me still, not do.
You are listening to WRP.